I'm Delana Pearson. I'm from Texas Tech. I'm a plant and soil science student, and I'm an undergrad. I'm a senior. Today I'm going to be talking to you about some of the work we've been doing with proximal sensors. We're doing water analysis via portable X-ray fluorescence spectrometry. So for those of you who don't know what it is, I'll talk about some of the basics. So basically, it's a handheld portable instrument that we can carry out into the field, and it does multi-element readings in seconds. The scan time can range from 30 seconds to 5 minutes. It requires minimal sample preparation, which is great. You don't have to do digestions like you might have to do for ICP, which allows greater throughput at no extra cost, if you can afford the instrument in the first place. So it's ideal for in situ analysis, and it's non-destructive, which is perfect if you have limited sample size. And also, it's a recognized analysis method by the EPA, NRCS, and SSSA. So this is the model that we have. It's the Delta Premium by Olympus Innovex. And how it works is, in the nose of the instrument, you have a detector and an X-ray tube. When you set the gun up against your sample and pull the trigger, the X-ray fires out X-rays at a known energy level, and every element has its own fluorescent signature. So the atoms get excited and they fluoresce, and the detector picks up how they fluoresce and is able to figure out what exact elements you have in your sample. So there are some limitations. It is better at detecting heavier elements. Its accuracy increases with atomic number. The denser the electron shell, the more easily the element is quantified. The lightest it detects is magnesium, and it's usually good at predicting the plant essential mineral elements, and it's excellent at predicting heavy metals, or heavy elements rather. It doesn't detect sodium-based salts or carbon. Moisture can cause difficulties for it. There's fluorescence attenuation. It gives interference with accurate readings. Also, its limits of detection aren't, it's not an ICP. So its limits of detection are not as great as an ICP. There can also be inter-element interference. So some elements share spectra. They might send back similar signals, and so it gives interference. You can't quite tell the difference between some of them. Additionally, it works best with samples that are homogeneous. So we thought that it would be really useful if we could use the PXRF on water for immediate analysis of water accidents, like for instance in the Animas River and the Gold King mine spill, or for instance in Flint, Michigan with the contaminated water. So while a technique is commonly used on soils, uncertainty exists as to its effectiveness on liquid matrices. But we wanted to do more work. We didn't let that stop us. So we wanted to start off simple, and our first project is water analysis via PXRF. The objective here was to evaluate the potential of the PXRF in predicting elements that we could then use to, it was going to detect elements that we could then use to predict the salinity of the water. So why not just use an EC meter? Because you can do that, but that tells you only total dissolved solids, where the PXRF can possibly, we're going to find out if it could tell you what is making your water saline, which elements are doing that. So our hypothesis, we set that, and our results were that yes, we were able to successfully predict EC via quantifying chlorine in samples, and we got an R-square value of 0.77, and this was the first study of its kind to focus on the PXRF for water analysis. So what we did for this project is we collected 252 water samples. Most of them we collected by hand in the southwestern states, but we had colleagues from 10 other countries send them to us, and then we categorized them into 6 different types, and we broke them down into lake, pool, river, sea, tap, and well water. We took an EC reading of all of them, and we had a wide range of 1.33 to over 156,000 microsiemens per centimeter. We also performed ICP analysis on them so that we'd have a really accurate benchmark against which we could judge our PXRF work with them. So when you're looking at solid samples with a PXRF, you can just place the nose of the gun right up against your sample. but you're not going to stick it into water or liquid. So we have these plastic sample cups, and they hold 14 milliliters of water, and they also have a special proline film that acts as a lid on them. And the proline film allows for maximum fluorescence transmissivity. So we put all our samples in the cups, and we also have a test stand. So the cup gets inverted on the test stand, and the gun gets inverted underneath, and then I can close the lid and protect myself from errant x-rays, which is really important. So what we found is there were a wide variety of elements detected, but we wanted to look at the ones that were common to all of our samples. So that ended up being calcium, chlorine, and potassium. We also ran some calibration curves with reagent grade KCl and NaCl, and we found there was reasonable agreement between the PXRF and the ICP. However, when we analyzed the actual samples, the PXRF readings were several times higher in elemental concentration for Cl, K, and calcium results, and we can correct for that. And we're pretty sure the variation was due to the fact that the gun is set for a soil mode calibration, and it's not targeted for a water matrix, which is what we're looking at. So here's some of the scatter plots we have here. This is looking at the log of the EC versus the log of the measured PXRF values for the three elements of focus. Our statistician, Samsubro Chakraborty in India, took care of the stats for us here, and he built predictive models. He partitioned the data randomly by splitting into groups of 70% for calibration and 30% for validation. And he created a segmented piecewise linear regression. And we were able to have accuracy of 0.77 for the chlorine, with a calibration root mean square error of 0.89. We didn't have as good agreement with the potassium or calcium. There we only had R square values of 0.41. And this was possibly due to matrix effects represented by absorption and secondary fluorescence. These are the plots of our observed model versus the predicted EC value, showing both calibration and validation with the one-to-one solid line. In general, all models overestimated at lower EC values and underestimated at higher EC values. Several of these overestimations occurred because of the relative scarcity of observations with low EC values. So like I said, our range was 1.33 to over 157 microsiemens per centimeter, but our mean value is only 7,837. So we didn't have a lot of really low ones. Additionally, about 10% of the water samples had chlorine levels that were either close to or below the detection limits for the PXRF. The detection limit for that is 60 to 100 parts per million. So even if the PXRF was only able to differentiate between remarkable and unremarkable samples, we still think it would be a really useful tool that could save both time and money over current processes right now. So we submitted our results for publication with the Journal of Hydrology, and it was published in November. So we were feeling very encouraged by these results, and we wanted to further study, and we wanted to look at quantifying metals in water. So with this project, metal-laden water analysis via PXRF, the objective was to statistically establish the PXRF's predictive ability for various elements in water at concentrations relative to the ICP. We hypothesized that the PXRF would perform better with higher concentrations of elements dissolved in water. The best relationship we were able to obtain was for potassium. We got an R-square value of 0.97, and copper was also very good at an R-square value of 0.93. Many of the methods were very similar to our last project, except for this time we had 390 samples. They all came from one country. They came from South Africa, and they were all the same type of water. They were leachate from mine tailings. So again, we placed them in the cups. We covered them with proline film. Should have mentioned previous to that, if there were any suspended particles in them, we filtered them out because that would cause a lot of interference with the PXRF. And then again, we ran them all through the ICP so we would have an accurate benchmark to judge them by. And the gun again was set in soil mode for three scans of 30 seconds each for a total of 90 seconds. We did the same for the last one. I just didn't mention it. So here are our values, our results. So this is the ICP versus the PXRF predicted ICP elements. We used a simple linear regression model again. We used elemental data as input, and we were able to achieve calibration R-square of 0.97 for potassium and 0.69 for iron. That was our lowest one. We feel this shows that elements detected by ICP can be satisfactorily predicted using corresponding PXRF elemental data. We noticed that except for calcium, the remaining elements showed different degrees of underestimation at higher analyte values, and we figure this is possibly due to the lack of samples, number of samples with higher concentrations. And here, we wanted to do some other single element tests. So all those water samples had multi-elements, but we wanted to see how the PXRF would perform with a single element. So we used ICP standards and ran some analysis with those, and there we got really solid results. They're almost all 0.1, actually they're all 0.99 except for magnesium and zinc, which were our R-square value of 1. So that was good. And so the reason that these results don't look like our last ones is for two reasons. The concentrations are quite different. The average PPM for our ICP standards was 500, whereas our average PPM for the other elements in our water samples was about 25 PPM. And additionally, the other reason why this is so wonderful is because there is no room for interference from multi-element spectral interference, since it's just one at a time. So we have written up this and submitted it for publication. I expect they'll be back to us any day now, saying yes, of course. So the conclusion is that this was a successful proof of concept demonstration. We found a simple and convenient procedure for satisfactorily predicting elemental concentrations in water. We kind of came up with more questions than what we answered, so we feel like there's a lot more room for investigation with the PXRF in water. So we think it really needs a development of a water mode calibration. That could really help, and future research should focus on more chemical diversity and look deeper at the multi-element versus the single-element analysis. These projects were made possible via the support of this. And thank you. Are there any questions? Yes? It doesn't detect sodium salts, so as far as I know, I wouldn't use it for that. The sodium's too light of an element, so the lightest it predicts accurately is magnesium. It needs a denser electron shell, so the sodium just isn't, it's unable at this time to do that. Yeah, it'd be great if it did, though. Fantastic question. I'm going to guess that there is less scatter, but that's only based on the fact that it's an accepted soil analysis method by those NRCS, EPA, and SSSA. But I honestly, I don't have a lot of experience with it. That's the thing I could look up and get back to you on, though. Okay. Yes?
Do you think or did you do any experimenting with TDS of the solid as far as the threshold above which you would have to filter? If we're trying to get this rapid, is there, you know, can we just go and take a grab sample and shine it on it, or do we need to filter always?
Good question. I know we actually had some samples from brine wells that were so saline I couldn't even read them with the PXR, with the EC meter actually, so we had to exclude them from our study. That's an excellent question. I can direct it to my professor, Dr. Weindorf. Although I just right now invented an in-situ centrifuge. And you could, like, put it in a vial and swing it above your head. I bet that would work. We'll collaborate on that. Yes. You have a question? Yeah, it's very... And same for putting it in the sample cups. They're really easy. They snap together easily.
So you can't put it in put it underwater.
You wouldn't want to. It's about $45,000. So yeah. You can. We have little, it's almost like another little thin plastic cover that goes over the detector, and you have to wipe it off in between samples, and if you poke it, more like when you poke it, you have to unscrew it and just replace it. So we have replacement little plastic filters, and then you want to be really careful not to get sample up into the gun. But yes, it happens, and it's a